This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hey, man, what's up?
What's going on? How you doing today?
I'm all right. Just, just kind of trying to hack away. I'm trying to do something. These sites, you know, I swear the first person that makes a sex worker site that actually works is going to make $1 billion in the first day.
Well, see, that's why I always fuck with Chris DeSale, because I can actually get a human person.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. What you about to say?
Well, no, I put a thing on, last year, on Sexy Jobs. And for those of you who don't know, it's like the want ads for, you know, sex workers, and you know, never really got any bites or anything. You know, then I got two messages today. Out of the blue, so I was like, let me look at my profile, because you know, I think, you know, and I kind of tried to straighten up some stuff and add better pictures, and it turned into a who's on first skit, because it would like choose a photo. I chose it, go back to the main page, no photo, go back, I chose it, no you know, it's just this thing. It's like, again, whoever makes a sex worker friendly platform that actually works, like you're gonna make like Elon Musk money. So it's just the things, you know, it's not all blowjobs and reach arounds.
It's way more than that. It's way more intricate than that. Yeah. You know, but see, the thing is it's something someone told me a long time ago. They said people are not interested in the journey. They're interested in the finish.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Oh, actually, before we get into it, I'm sorry. Thank you for having me back, and hello, everybody. You know, in the Smoke Lounge audience and everything. Sorry, it's great to be back so quickly. So I really appreciate it.
No doubt. So let me go ahead and do the particulars. We can get this thing rolling. Okay.
Yep.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Smokers Lounge here on Anchor, the perfect place for you to start your podcast career. All you got to do is download the Anchor app onto your phone or go to anchor.fm, get yourself a profile. You can monetize your stuff, make money right now, get your stuff distributed on all the platforms, and it's for free. So go to anchor.fm or download the Anchor app to your phone. I'm your host, Kavanaugh. The Southern Champ, a.k.a. the Poor Rap Star. You know what it is. Excuse me. Go to allmylinks.com/pornrapstar to see my porn, to listen to my music, and to follow me on social media. Also, we are sponsored by LS World, the Facebook of the LS community. I'm talking about lifestyle. I'm talking about swinging. I'm talking about BDSM. Freaky shit. So go there, get yourself a profile. Mingle with kick-minded freaky people like yourself, and you might even find a couple of events over there that you might could attend. And also say hello to Princess Gemini while you're there, because she's over there as well. Also, I'm a proud member of the GW District Black Podcast Network. I'm talking about multiple podcasts that give you the Black experience, the Black point of view on the multitude of topics. Plus, speaking about multitudes, segue, you also got the opportunity to pick from over 500 Black sellers and retailers talking about fashion, beauty, health, books, you name it, they got it. So go to shopgwdistrict.com. Buy Black, support the Black business, build the Black economy so we can create generational wealth. So I'm here with my smoke buddy, Mr. Billy Pilgrim.
Hey, man, what's going on?
What's going on? And right now, when this air, I don't think your interview would have dropped on Bonus Smoke Fridays, But you can go over to Patreon right now and actually listen to it, as well as many other interviews, as well as episodes of Smoke This Over podcast. Also, I got something new coming called Bobby Rants. I'll let y'all smoke that over for a minute. So he got his stuff up over there. And I just want to start off first. I saw that you tweeted, yes. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And understand the date is being recorded. Paul Orndorff was announced dead.
Yeah.
Now, if you know who Mr. Wonderful is, well, actually, you tell him who Mr. Wonderful is, because you know who he is. You tell him who he is, man.
Well, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff was one of the, you might remember from his big run in the WWF back in the 80s, but he was more than just like a WWF star. He was like a really phenomenal territory wrestler. Worked in Florida and Memphis, was like basically a star out of the gate, and just like a really tough, rugged guy. And he was famous for having the pile driver, and a lot of wrestlers had the pile driver move as a finisher, but the way he did it literally looked like, you know, it was just it, like it killed you. And
he was really the first one to do the jumping pile driver.
Yeah.
That now, understand, no one has copied that move.
Yeah, yeah, no, because he apparently was such a workout freak and such a health nut that his thighs were so strong that he would basically. And I'm a wrestling geek, so I kind of.
Me too.
I read a lot of wrestling history, and I really got into that. And there's in wrestling mm-hmm. history, if you need something interesting to read, or you want to, you know, try to get your kid into doing. Getting into history, a lot of really interesting shit with pro wrestling. But his thing was, the trick is you hold the person up very high, and then you sit down, and their head never technically hits the thing. It could be jarring, but it doesn't hit. He was able to do the jumping thing because his legs were so thick and strong that he would hold your head in place like a vice, and then leap. So you would hit. But like you didn't move, like your neck, your head, your shoulders, you were like so, you know, like locked in, like an astronaut taking off, that all you had to do was sell. And basically, the only way you had to sell was just lay there, because that's pretty much what you would do if he really decided to drop you on your head. But
and see, what's crazy is, this generation can't appreciate our generation what we saw. Because I also heard that Terry Funk is in a rest home. Man, my heart sunk because I just watched a match with him and Jerry the King Lawler on Pluto TV.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The first 5-star match. Yeah, when he when he would scream the... no, actually, some good news. I listened to the Jim Cornette podcast, and they actually talked about that.
Apparently, yeah, but
that's
Jim Cornette.
Not necessarily true. Like, apparently, he's doing good. He is kind of getting older. I mean, the guy he retired. I think 2014 was his last match. Don't hold me to that. But he's doing better than people think. It's just that he made a video a couple months ago saying, "No more." Because people love Terry. He's like one of the few wrestlers that universally loved in the industry, and he's like, "Look, stop sending me stuff. I don't want to sign stuff anymore." You know, he's just getting older.
I can't do no more. Come on now.
Well, he just lost his wife.
Yeah,
and I think that took a lot out of him. And I think he's just kind of now an old man, and he's maybe not as sharp as he once was. Terry Funk, as far as what I've heard on Jim Cornette podcast with Brian Last, he's doing okay for a guy who's like literally, because you got to see, here's the thing about, I think it's more his wife that took a lot of the steam out of the engine, because they were married and then they got divorced. And if you read his biography, he actually gave up the world title because he didn't want to lose
for her.
And then he changed his entire.
I remember hearing about that.
Huh?
I remember hearing about it, that he gave up the world title, because it's like, it's crazy when I think about him and his brother Dory.
Yeah, yeah.
And see, this is why I tell you, like, when I talk to the people in this generation or younger or a little bit after us, I say y'all missed Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair when they were at their best. I'm like, yeah. Y'all missed Nick Bockwinkel.
Yeah, well, it's funny about the NWA title because it was a thing where you wrestled 7 days a week, and it was Ric Flair is the only one that never wanted the belt taken off him. Basically, what would happen is they give you the title, and you would be a champion for about a year, maybe two, and then basically the wrestler would eventually just walk into the office and say, "Take it off me." They would say, "I don't want to be champ anymore," because you would travel 7 days a week and you would wrestle an hour a night.
Yeah, because when Jim breaks down their schedule,
it's ridiculous.
I remember hearing Rick used to talk about it. Like, I went over to Japan, with Papa. Yeah. And then I had to go to St. Louis. Then I had to go to Memphis. I was sitting there like, God. But see, that's why I think, to me, and I always said this, if Vince McMahon never killed kayfabe, the way wrestling is now, it wouldn't be. The closest we would have for the moveset would be the Dynamite Kid and Tiger Mask when they did their thing. That would be the closest we'd have. For real.
Actually, to bring it full circle back to Terry Funk sold his family's territory when cable TV became more popular because Terry was always ahead of the game. He actually saw the way the wrestling business was going to go and he saw that eventually you're not going to be able to, you know, like this is the technology and the society kind of becoming more and more connected. You're not going to be able to hold this off any longer. So he sold the territory because he saw what cable television was going to do on the horizon. And so he knew, like, Vince didn't help wrestling in a lot of ways, but the problem was a lot of the promoters would not change with the times. They all wanted to go to New York and make the money. And, you know, when you see something on TV, you know, it's like, it's just like anything. You see something on MTV, you think it's better than your local music scene. You know, it's just not that thing. But Terry was always ahead of the game in that regard. And the beauty of the thing I miss about pro wrestling, and I don't watch a lot of the new stuff because I don't want to be a grumpy old man. My main complaint with the new wrestling is there's no telling of a story and there's no consistency because I get it. It's predetermined. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, they rush to do everything and then it's over before it starts but nothing really makes sense.
But see, to me, my theory is this. If he had never... Okay, when he did his expansion, if he had never killed kayfabe, he would never overtook WCW. And eventually, the NWA would have made a comeback. The reason why I say this is that they say that he did it because of the commissions. That's bullshit, in my opinion. He knew that that WCW always whooped his ass in NWA. Because as a kid, I remember Black Sunday. Let's make this clear for everybody that's listening.
Well, I remember that,
My grandma and granddaddy was like, "What the fuck is this bullshit, Jim? fuck is this? Where Dusty? Where Rick? Who the fuck is Bob Backlund? I see Andre, but who the fuck is that Backlund dude?"
Yeah, Southern wrestling and Northern wrestling is very, very different, in every way, shape, or form. But and also, he wasn't the first one to try national expansion. Vern Gagne tried.
Yeah, Vern moved real fast. He went straight to Vegas quick.
And the thing with the NWA, it comes down to they weren't willing to change with the times. And then with Crockett, here's the thing, and I'm not a business major. I just know common sense. Like, if I all of a sudden blow up tomorrow, and I'm just, for the rest of the year, I'm setting the world on fire, and I'm getting offers from studios, and I'm just, every girl wants to work with me, and I literally am going to kind of take a moment, because even though a lot of money's coming in, people's reaction is to spend a lot of money. And it's like, you always want to bring in more than you're letting out. And Crockett spent itself out of business and tried to compete with the end, try to be WWE. And then they got bought by Turner. And then you had a bunch of guys who thought they were better than wrestling and didn't know how to run wrestling. And then that's what kind of was the end. Like, the art of wrestling with the NWA was you would come to town and you would do a 1 hour draw. And in the beginning, it was like, can your guy, your local guy, survive? Like, you're North Carolina, so you're kind of,
you already know.
Yeah, the Crockett Georgia Championship Wrestling. And if, can your guy survive? And the art form is, by the 45th minute mark, the last 10 minutes, then it's like, can the champion hold on? Because then you think the guy's going to win, and it doesn't. It's like a draw, or maybe he loses by like cheating, and then the guy moves on, and your guy looks better because the
So what was you watching? Was you watching WWE, or was you watching NWA back in the day?
Mainly? I watched everything. We had cable, but I was more Georgia Championship Wrestling, the Crockett's, and then like WWE for a few things. But I really liked the NWA better. And, you know, because it was more real. And that's kind of my main, like I said, the guys are so athletic. But here's the problem. If every guy, like in porn, if every guy has a 12-inch dick, then a 12-inch dick isn't special. If everybody does flying moves and super athletic and can land on the feet after like jumping 10 feet in the air, well, then it's not special. And you're not telling anything. And you're not telling a story. You know, you had Great Muta, and then you had Arn Anderson. You had the Steiners, but then you had the Midnight Express. It's a combo of things. That's why, like, when people ask me, you know, oh, you're trying to compete with these guys, I'm like, I'm not competing with anybody because I'm bringing what I have to the table. If a girl doesn't want to work with me, then that's fine. But, you know, I can bring something different and make different content with this girl, then she's going to go off and make different content with somebody else, and it's both are going to sell. So there's no competition. And now wrestling is kind of all the same, and there's no real, you know, again, you're I'm not really a pizza delivery guy. The woman I'm going to work with tomorrow is not really a French maid. But we're selling you the fantasy. I get that you guys don't really hate each other, but please, for the love of God, I'm watching it, or I'm paying a ticket to see it. Like, give me a reason to be invested. There's no more story. There's no more feuds.
Because I think, like, this generation really didn't. Like, I was in Dort Arena. I saw the hate that Ric Flair got when he went against Black Jack Mulligan.
Oh, yeah.
It was hate. Like, the crowd really hated him. When I look at Jerry the King Lawler, now, who I still say, I didn't really appreciate that motherfucker more than I did. Because when I sit back and look, this motherfucker was turning heel face.
In the same town for 20-some-odd years.
Yeah, and then when they were breaking that, because I also used to wonder when I was a kid, well, why don't, you know, like, Bach Winkle come to, you know, the NWA or this, that, and third. And so then with Jim Cornette and me getting older, I was like, ah, I see. So, because, like, now I watch everything. I'm not even going front. I watch New Japan. I watch Ring of Honor. I watch AEW.
Oh. Did you see that? Ring of Honor is probably the one I probably should watch more regularly, but I don't. But I need
the
to.
The pure division is on point, bro. If you love pure wrestling, Jive and Grissom is a beast, man.
Well, I saw the Briscoe farm fight.
Yes,
and that is by far and away the best cinematic quote unquote match because
ever
it made sense. And they did a little tongue-in-cheek when he's pulling out the table and he's like, well, how convenient. How convenient. And they did everything. Or he goes up on top of the camper and he's going to jump off on him and then the guy gets up and he goes, what are you going to do now, dumbass?
And the daddy walked up and said, you got to finish in the ring, boys. Got to get out.
Yeah.
Got to get out.
And here's the thing. It was all made realistic. It was like, if you know Southern people, that's kind of, and that's how men used to be. Like, you had a problem, I'm going to punch you in the face, you know, and that's the thing. You're going to punch each other in the face a couple minutes, and then you're going to realize that neither one's going to go down easy. So then it's like, all right, fine, let's go get a beer. It's over. We want whatever, you know, and it was good. And the Briscoe brothers are, in my opinion, the best tag team going today because they get consistent and they can go off and do their own thing and then come back.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Ring of Honor and New Japan.
Yeah, love that. Have you checked out MLW?
I love MLW. I kind of lost pace with them. I really thought they had something going with the Contra, but when the pandemic hit, that kind of really affected them. But I think they're starting to roll again.
They supposed to be on Vice Saturday. I was looking for them, and they weren't even up there. I was like, what the hell? And like, I watch everything, dog, even to the independents from OVW to Southwest Wrestling Entertainment. Charlie Haas, that dude is crazy.
You know what you need to... Unfortunately, I think it's hard to get right now because Jim Cornette is refiguring everything. But when his website's back up, he has for like $100 18 discs of the old Crockett house show films.
Oh, I know you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And it's worth it. My wife got it for me for my, well, I think it was like a birthday present, and it's incredible. I mean, there's no sound. Mm-hmm. You're watching, you know, just some amazing wrestling, but like one of the things I wish they would just, because again, when like I want to do more plot based stuff. I've been making props. I have a project in the works, and I've been buying like pieces of stuff. So that way, if I work with a girl, I go like, well, I have outfits or I have things that I'm putting together ideas, and people think, well, they're not going to sift through an idea or a plot. They're not going to sift through a plot in the porn. I'm like, they will if you time it right and you condition your audience. The audience will tolerate a long feud if you actually take the time to condition them for it.
I'm saying this right now, and this has been 15 years of me being in the business. My role play scenes have always sold more than my straight fuck scenes. And my POVs, the only POVs that, and actually my role play POVs sold better than the fuck POVs, because people do want some drama with their sex. They're just being honest. They want a good story.
But that's the thing. You just write something. Like I did a scene and there was a technical malfunction. So we're reshooting tomorrow. Then we're going to shoot something new. But we did a scene. It was like literally 5 minutes where the haphazard, Spacey wife didn't put oil in the car, and the mechanic is trying to be nice and like, look, I can't get it to you by the end of the week. It's gonna cost a lot of money. And then as she's starting to panic, and then by the end I'm like, oh, like, look, lady, I'm sorry, there's nothing I could do. And then she tries to stop me and she's like accidentally touches something she's not supposed to touch by accident, and then it goes from there. And it's a different approach to the you want your car fixed fast. But also, we got to the meat of it, and it was, you know, we kept it very simple. Here's a plot, and now here's a nice thing of me fucking her. And even though there was a technical difficulty, I just kind of been posting little mini clips all week, and I got like 50 new followers just from the clips with no audio. And you know, wait till they see the fact that, you know, the reason why I'm banging the shit out of her. It's you give the audience a little bit of story, they will come. You are Carolina. Actually, you're a Southern wrestling fan. You might remember this. My favorite thing, and I watch it all the time, Ole Anderson, the most surly son of a bitch to ever put on wrestling. He pretended to be a good guy. Now, for those who, I know your audience is probably like, wait a minute, this is a porn podcast. Why the fuck are these two guys talking about wrestling? Wrestling and porn have a lot in common.
Yes, they do.
It's predetermined. I'm going to come, but it's real. those strokes are real, folks. I really slip it off the couch.
I really make those faces.
what do you call it? Ole Anderson was this diehard bad guy. He was such a good bad guy that he didn't have to leave the South for his career. All of his career, he made six figures, like in the 70s and 80s.
And was a
pretended
booker.
To be a good guy for 18 months, just to set up Dusty Rhodes for a cage match in the Omni, and then he turned on him. And then, and it calls a ride. You can go on YouTube and see the video. You see fans trying to get up on the cage and like get in the cage to help Dusty. There was people in the audience crying and screaming Dusty and, you know, so on. And then the next episode of Georgia Championship Wrestling, the majority of the entire episode was Ole Anderson being interviewed and basically talking about, like, I had to pretend to like Tommy Rich. I had to pretend to be a good guy and kiss the babies. And I hated it. And I did it, you know, and they gave, like, they actually showed an old video clip of Dusty doing an interview from Florida. Like, they gave it all this background. And it was like, and they got like 4 months of sellouts all across the territory after the fact. But it was like 18 months for this one story. And it was fucking brilliant. And you can do that today. You just have to weather the storm.
Yeah, because I remember I tweeted to somebody. I said they don't have long storylines. And dude was like, well, you had Kenny Omega. And no, y'all missing the point. Like, I'm asking you this, but I'm going to give you mine first. My favorite, my number one greatest wrestling match to me that I see with my own eyes. And I'm about to fuck your head up because it's not a WWE match. Not an AEW match, fellas. It is a NWA match. And it was 12 minutes, but it felt like 30. Magnum TA versus Tully Blanchard.
I don't wait.
I quick match.
Yep.
In the cage.
Yep.
Merrick Bash.
The greatest cage match ever.
Yeah. And if you watch it, it's 12 minutes. But it don't feel like 12 minutes. It felt like 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And the reason why I love this match, because the build-up for it was perfect. It was about competition. That's what it was about. Madam T.A. could not beat Tully, and Tully kept rubbing it in his face the whole time. They had, like, what, two matches prior to this. And both times, I think, no. Tully beat him to win the United States belt. Because before that, he beat Wahoo to win it.
Yeah.
I remember that when he did the belly to belly on Wahoo. And that was a very brutal match, people. Madam T.A. was bleeding. Wahoo wasn't. But anyway, back to my point. But so he faces Tully again, but the match ends in a double count out because both men knocked each other out. And the back and forth between these guys on the different shows from WCW to Worldwide Wrestling to Midland Championship Wrestling. They was beefing. They were fighting. He was jumping him. He was jumping us. So finally, Jim Crockett said, we're going to end this. And he made the match. A cage match. I quit cage match. You never seen it again. And then my number two match, and then I'm going to let you talk, is, I know you remember this, Stone Cold versus Triple H, Three Stages of Hell match. To me, the greatest gimmick match ever, and WWE do not use it anymore. First match was a wrestling match. Third match was a Hell in a Cell, and it ended with both of them knocking each other out. The only reason why Triple H won, because he fell on top of damn Stone Cold. I was so mad.
Do you know about the personal thing with the actual real life thing between Tully and Magnum, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Tully's wife married Magnum. And
yeah, and
there was like at the time, then now they're all one big happy family. But like back then, there was a little bit of a touchiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing they fought like two guys who didn't like each other, which is a lot of rolling around and like, you know, punching and mauling. And then the thing that really made it brutal, which I always, when they have these quid matches, I'm like, it's so simple, but you're not doing it. They had the microphone, and the guy would shove the microphone, you know, and it was very realistic. Like, think about it. Like, I'm grabbing your face, and I'm shoving the mic in, and I'm yelling and screaming. Like, do you give? And then
when he said, don't get mad, he start beating him with the mic.
Yeah, exactly. I would have to say, the Ric Flair, this is kind of a gimme, but the Ric Flair, Terry Funk, I quit match from 89.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. One of my favorite matches that I never quite kind of saw the whole, because I don't think there's actually video footage of it, but it's Memphis. It's Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell versus Jerry Lawler and Dutch Mantel, and it's a Texas Death Match, and it, the original match is like 45 minute long, and there's like 27 falls, and they're just literally just, it's nonstop action and running away, and then they kind of do the same finish where one falls on top of the other, and then they're totally counted out. So whoever gets to their feet first wins. And the way they fell, by the time the bad guy stands up, he's pushing up the good guy. So he's, you know, it's so technically Dutch and Jerry Lawler win. But again, it's that beauty of when they're doing it right, you're fighting for 27 falls and it doesn't get old. And the reason why they did that was he listened to the crowd. It wasn't supposed to go that way. He just kept going because the crowd was just like eating it up. And that's another thing that drives me nuts about modern wrestling is that they don't listen to the crowd anymore. They have their set thing and they're going to do it. And you can see when they're kind of off time, and it's like, you guys know what you're doing. Just call it in the ring. Just, you know the finish and call it in the ring. It worked for 100 some odd years.
And... But like I said, because of the fact that, because to me, the game was so guarded back then. See, like this. We about to correlate the wrestling with the porn people. Just like wrestling, porn was guarded.
Yeah.
It wasn't that easy to get in. It wasn't as simple as I had a cell phone or I had a camera or even a site. No. You had to literally be ushered in every which way. Same thing with professional wrestling. They wanted it to be as real as possible because that was their money. Yeah. Because it wasn't that they were touring around the world. They were touring in a small area. So that means it's a good possibility you might get seen. Yeah. And trust me, the way that some of these wrestlers is now, if they was back in the day, like, shoot, you'll never see the Young Bucks be doing a YouTube channel. Man, they would have got their ass beat. Shit beat out their ass when they got in the locker room. Like, so you want to do YouTube channels, huh?
Yeah. I will say this. This is what porn has over... Because when you said the Young Bucks, it made me think of, like, you know, if you're like a young kid that just turned 20 and you're like, you know, 100 and, I don't know, 50 pounds and you're super lean like Jordy or Connor Cox.
Yeah.
And you're so lean and like to the point where, you know, like the girls could actually pick you up and do shit to you. Like guys like that weren't in the industry back in the day, you know?
No.
But now if you want to work for a studio, like I had one kid hit me up like a year ago wanting me to produce a video. And I looked at him, I'm like, dude, you have the look. Go to Connor's, you know, he owns a modeling agency. Go to Brazzers, go to Bang Bros. Like literally to every studio male talent is like a 5'5", like, you know, 140 pound, like lean kid, like D Williams and Sarah J and whatnot, you know. And he's like, yeah, I just don't want to show my face. I'm like, yeah, get out of my DMs. Get the fuck out of my DMs.
Please.
Don't come back. But to the credit of all these young guys, I think they have a little bit more respect for the industry in that they take it a little bit more seriously than I think some of these new wrestlers do, you know, because it's they're trying to, you know, I don't know, they just kind of, it's a little too tongue in cheek. It's like I'm not here to be in on the joke. I'm here to, you know, to be told a story, you know. So I think like the kind of the porn has handled the all inclusive thing better than pro wrestling, because it's like, we're still giving you the fantasy, we're still doing porn, and you know, we take it very seriously. Like, you're not going to come on set and be a jackass and tongue-in-cheek it, you know, like, I'm not going to tolerate it, you know.
It's like
if I met Jordy tomorrow, he's very serious.
Definitely a distinct difference between professional and the amateur bullshit when it comes to versus wrestling, where I'm going to see the same match in PWG that I probably see in AEW.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the other thing. Like, just I'm not going to say slow down. I'm not going to say do less. But, like, it really now, again, if everybody's going to be doing it, like, okay, every guy that's 300 pounds can still move like Rey Mysterio now. That's great. Well, then now I need a story or I need like a reason shit's happening more than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but look, I want to ask you this, though, because I was thinking about this. Now, like you, I listen to Jim Cornette heavy. And I didn't know his true history until I started listening to the podcast. I mean, I knew he came from Mid-South because I remember when he slapped the shit out of Bill Watts. Mm-hmm. I remember him when they was in World Class. And I remember when they came to WCW. And I didn't get to watch him with Smoky Mountain because we didn't get Smoky Mountain. I did see him when he went up to WWF. With Smoky Mountain and, of course, a manager there. But anyway, I always followed his career. And I remember him talking about the history of Memphis wrestling. So to me, this is the question I want to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Which organization do you think, because you know Netflix got that series coming called Heels, which we're going to get into after this question. Because I'm curious about that series. But which organization would you think make a great Netflix series? I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours.
Oh, that's a good question. That's a very original. Honestly, if I was going to do a cinematic series, I would probably think maybe either Memphis or Florida in the 70s when Dusty blew up.
Me and you on the same boat. Me and you on the same boat process. I was going to say Memphis. Actually, beginning where he took over from Nick Gulas.
Yeah.
Where he took over from Nick Gulas. Because to me, like I was watching Reba. I said, I can see Reba playing Jeannie Jerry. I can see her playing.
I just got her book, actually. I just got her book, like, in the mail. I'm not lying, like, a week and a half ago.
Mm.
Yeah, no, I didn't know about the show Heels, though. I didn't know they were doing a wrestling show.
Yeah, what's his guy? I can't think of it. Stephen Amell is going to be in it. The guy that played in the Arrow. And it's basically about two brothers restarting a failed wrestling promotion their dad had. And I take it, Stephen Amell, it's supposed to be two brothers that are going to be beefing. That's going to be the main, I guess, thing that, I guess, their storyline as far as wrestling. And Stephen Amell, I guess, supposed to be the bad guy. His brother supposed to be the good guy. So I'm curious to see how that series is going to go, because I know Glow was pretty good when I saw it on Netflix. But to me, I think, a lot of people don't realize there's a lot of wrestling movies that's been out there. I remember Body Slam with Roddy Piper.
Body Slam, yeah.
God, what was the one with WCW?
Ready to Rumble.
You Ready to Rumble? But then there was a one. Now I can't think of the name of this sucker, but it was one that was back in the day where the storyline was the guy was wrestling against this masked wrestler. He gets stuck in the ring, and it posed to being he got his decapitated. So the whole thing is a mockumentary. It's a documentary. It's serious though. Of them trying to figure out if that masked guy supposed to be the dude that got killed. At the end of it, it was him because he lost it. No, it wasn't him because he supposedly came back from the dead or whatever and had a match and beat his ass. That was a good-ass movie. There's been a lot of...
Go ahead. Vern Gagne in the 70s, I have the DVD. You can get the DVD, I think, online. The Wrestler, the original wrestler from the 70s, Ed Asner, It was actually a good movie. It was like a made-for-TV movie, but it was actually a good movie.
Wait, so with the Fonz? The Fonz?
No. I know what movie you're talking about, but that's not the movie.
That.
Like, Vern Gagne made a movie with Ed Asner, and everybody basically played themselves, and it's called The Wrestler. And then there's another movie with Alex Karras called The Bull, I believe. And that movie was okay. I watched it recently. It was...
Mm-hmm.
It was okay. It's hard. Whenever they make anything about porn or wrestling, it's kind of hard to do because it depends if you're going to show it in a positive light. And also, you also have to maintain a balance because, like, Glow lost me in the second season because it just kind of became a little bit not enough about the wrestling. You know, kind of like in mob movies. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, there's some internal family drama. Fine. I want to see Italians walking around with their hands doing things and, like, you know, hey, making moves. Like, that's, it's a gangster movie. That's what I want to see. But, oh, God damn it. I'm blanking. No, the kid, the guy who played Arrow, he actually was, he did some professional wrestling. So he might be good because he actually wrestled for real.
Yeah, no, I actually saw the match that he had with
Daniel Bryan. Chris Daniels,
and it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
Because, like, I mean, but no, but Pat McAfee, yo, he shocked the fuck out of me. I watched that match on NXT, bruh. He's the truth. He's the truth. I gotta give him his props.
I think, again, and actually, this is the WWE's problem. I think you probably could do something with him and make him a wrestler and make him a special attraction, but they don't want to make the effort. And I think WWE is setting up for a sale.
And I think so, too, to Disney.
Yeah, and the thing is,
in years, and ain't no way in hell he's going to be able to continue. He can't be. He's getting too old.
Well, not just that, but it's, they don't want to be a wrestling company. If you see the shit they talk about, they don't want it. Actually, it's, that'd be like us shooting a porn scene and not wanting it to be porn. But, like, they're not allowed to call themselves wrestlers and not allowed to talk about the belt.
You know, I have a theory on that. And here's my theory. Vince McMahon hates pro wrestling.
Yeah, no, you're
right. And so people can understand what I mean by this. He's the son of a promoter. At one point with WWF, and hold up, and he despises the NWA. And he despises Southern wrestling. These are the reasons why I say that. These are factors. He was son of a promoter. At the time, I'm pretty sure he hadn't been alive when the WWF split with the NWA. Or he knew of it. He heard his dad complaining about it. I'm pretty sure when it came to them promoters, they probably, the conversations and the shit they probably said to each other, especially when they used to do the title versus title, can imagine. Then on top of that, he always kept losing to the NWA. He lost in Georgia. A lot of the territory that he tried to take over that was holding him back was NWA territories. And because even to the point that he don't even want them to say belt, strap, championship match. You get what I'm saying?
Well, that's funny enough. Vince's dad was actually on the board of the NWA, even though he wasn't a part of the NWA. That was actually like a big bone of contention in the 80s when Vince went national. I'm blanking on his name. He's a famous Georgia promoter. He was actually at the Jimmy Carter's inauguration.
You talking about Barnett? You talking about Barnett?
Yeah, Barnett. Okay, now this dude, the fact that no one's wrote a biography on him, a gay promoter who basically invented studio wrestling, was hugely influential and like a power in wrestling forever. He had this very specific voice. Like, be like, I'm gonna do a very bad impression. Like, oh my boy, I swear. It's like, you know, he was openly gay to the point where he invented studio wrestling. He invented Australian wrestling. WCW, he started, he was banished to Australia because of some scandal. I have the book in my library somewhere. It's called The Lean 30, I think, where Rock Hudson, him, and like, a Kentucky football team, you know, and he basically had to leave the country and go live in Australia for like 10 years. And Ole Anderson fucked him out of his spot in Georgia. So he went.
Yeah. While he was going to China to get a suit.
So, and the thing is, they, you know, it's funny when you hear all these millennials kind of, they're wrestling fans, but they rag on wrestling. And you always talk about, like, oh, it's so racist or it's so sexist, which there is at times, but also there was a lot of, like, integration in Memphis happened because of wrestling. And, you know, they had the most famous, most powerful promoter until he died was Jim Barnett, who was gayer than a picnic basket in May.
You ain't lying.
You know, there was it's a very complex history. And I just find it interesting when people rag on something, but they claim to be a fan of it. It's like, I've never heard you say one good thing about it. Why do you watch it? You know, but Jim Barnett helped Vince go national, and I totally, he hated wrestling. He was the illegitimate son, I think, of Vince Sr. Because he grew up partially in a trailer park in the South. That's part of the reason why he hates Southerners, I think. He grew up dirt poor and then went to work for his dad. And, you know, again, son of the promoter, I'm sure he got, especially apparently Vern, because he really fucked Vern hard. You know, Vern and all these other guys mocked him, and Vince went systematically and just fucked him hard. You know, it's be very, very weary of an overdriven person, because they, I mean, I've had a very rough June. I've had a lot of shoots fall through and people jerking my chain as far as scheduling and getting the vibe of like, apparently I'm not as like, this is not your priority, but I think you're trying to keep me on the line for whatever. And my thing is, I just put you on mute. I'm going to work with you, but I'm not going to make, like, if we shoot together, it's going to be either by a third party or you're going to be making the effort. Like, I don't get real mean and petty about it, but it's like, I'm not going to chase you. You know, this hard to get here. I'm not going to chase you to shoot with me.
And that's the interesting thing that I think that people don't realize is the hard part of being a man in this business is finding girls to shoot with.
Yes.
And it's difficult because, one, even if you live in an area, if you're not within a certain clique, you ain't going to get in for so much.
Yeah. And here's the other thing. I'm now officially established male talent. You can't deny that. I have studio credits. I've worked with a lot of named people, yada, yada, yada. I'm kind of in a weird holding pattern. I'm hopefully on the beginning of the next level of the journey and so on and so forth. It's kind of harder now to get shoots because it's like I'm proving myself, but I don't have that clout cachet, whatever, yet. So, like, I'm going to Miami in September for Exotica. And there's a couple of people that I know are going to be there. So, like, it's looking promising, but it's, you know, it's kind of weirdly, it becomes a little high schoolish where it's like, I want to work with the cool kids. And I live in Atlanta and I like Atlanta, but I'm a white guy living in Atlanta. And I'm going to be very honest. Black women are the most beautiful women on the planet, but it's a chocolate city, you know, which is a Southern term. And, you know, the white people only want to work with black guys, and the black girls only want to work, or they want to work with name.
But see, that's because you're in the South. See, like, if you maybe was it up north, Midwest, shit, Colorado, you know what I'm saying? It'd be probably totally different. Because trust me, even in North Carolina, I can imagine the difficulties you have, and I have in North Carolina. I'm pretty sure it's about the same. So, because even when I talked to, when I was hollering at, like, white females that lived in the, at first, a lot of girls won't hit me back. But then when it got cool to fuck a black dude, that's when they started hitting me back.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Some of them do it for a business thing, and some of them, that's their genuine preference.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It just, the thing that puzzles me is like, okay, well, if we're not going to work together on camera, then I'm going to move on because I'm trying to get to the point where I have the problems that Thor Johnson has, where it's like too many people want to work with me. I can't respond to every message. But a lot of times it boggles my mind is like they'll contact me first, and then all of a sudden as it gets closer to the date, it unravels and it's like I passed testing and I left my schedule open. And I'm like, again, it's how you present yourself, because I'm very much team player, but at the same time, I can't allow myself, like, I'm not going to chase you because then it makes me look weak in a way. And, you know, and I'm not talking from a male standpoint, but it's like, It's like, okay, like I'm worth working with because you're going to have an easy time working with me, and I'm, you know, and I'm professional and so on. If it's like because you want to work with this guy more, or it's because, or I don't know what your reason is. And again, I'm not going to grill or get mad or throw a tantrum, but it's like, all right, well, I'm going to move on. And next time we work together.
Now, see, the thing that is my brother is that that's why I do this pod. Because people don't realize men, we catch it worse than women do. Because no matter what, we have to have a co-star. Women eventually will have to have a co-star. We have to damn near come out the gate with one.
Yeah.
So it's a difference between all I got to do is I wish it was that easy that we could just do a bunch of videos where we jerk the fuck off, walk around butt ass neck, and then buy that shit. No. Our fan base want to see us fuck something.
Yeah.
Their fan base want to see them get fucked. After a while, at first, it's a dildo. After a while, they want a real dick.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend who is very successful. I don't want to mention her name, but she's very she's very popular. And the problem is she only works really with her husband. And I've been trying, and it's like, well, and we've been having conversations, and it's like she's kind of frustrated with her position. And I've been really kind of avoiding talking about, like, look, maybe doing a studio scene would not be the worst thing. Or maybe you working with a male talent that you trust wouldn't be, like pepper it out. Like, don't automatically start doing, you know, working with other guys all the time. Make it like a special occasion or once or twice a year do a studio scene. Because she's just ridiculously talented and she's very beautiful. And it's like, and her husband is good, or like her husband could be a very good male talent if he wanted to be, but it's like people want to see you with somebody different.
Because I tell anybody, hey, look, we're gonna take a break, people, then we're gonna come back. I'm about to cut it off and hit you back, and then we're gonna come back and pick this back up. All right.
Okay.
Hey. Okay, we back. Now what I'm about to say is the issue that you said that. Some of y'all people, y'all wondering what the hell just happened. No, I was running out of time because they only allowed me to do up to like 60 minutes, and we was hitting that, so I went ahead and just restarted because this is getting good.
See, they can't give a black guy a break. They're like, you only get 60 minutes. You can't even, like, you know, like what the fuck?
I'm just saying, it could have been unlimited. I swear, they're killing me. Yeah, I told you, man, you were good shit. But anyway, let's get back to what I was saying. The blueprint, so females can understand this, is perfect world. You have a resident male talent. Now, let me explain to what that is. He's a guy that you can get with. It doesn't matter whether he's just a fuck boy or he's a guy that actually does his seriousness in your area. It's someone that you can work with on a regular basis, you can get content with, and you can establish, you know, chemistry. Then you branch out and shoot with other male talents. Now, the problem is when these girls come in, when they're married or what have you, the problem is that they're worried about their man, or their man doesn't want them to go but so far because we you know what it is being a man.
Yeah.
How some of these dudes think. So, and it sometimes hurt the woman's money.
Yep.
So it's like, to me, a lot of times that's why I said about the gatekeepers. They kept that out of here. Because if you couldn't fuck more than two dudes differently, they're not going to talk to you. They're not going to pay you for a scene.
Yeah.
So they ain't going to contact you for content trade.
Yeah. Here's my thing with it. And if you don't, I had a shoot canceled on me, and the person just texted me, the producer said she doesn't want to do it. And I said, because she's doing this or this, like, doesn't want to work with me or just not the business. And he said both. And I'm like, okay. And apparently, from what I've seen just from peripheral, it was more that she just didn't want to work with me. And I don't know what the reason was. It's not, I never talked to her. It's not my place to ask and so on. And my thing is, if you tell me something's come up or something's happened, it's like, all right, that's fine. Or if we can't do this like we originally planned, unless you're going to volunteer the information, I'm not going to start poking. So I try to roll with the flow. The thing that pisses me off, And I don't, again, put it out verbally because I just don't want to deal with the bullshit is, if you're set on working with a very narrow type, that's fine, and that is your right. But if you're not going to, if there's male talent within the area and you're not going to work with somebody who takes it seriously regardless, and you start working with guys like somebody's boyfriend or you just dudes that you like, well, I think he's hot, so I'm going to fuck him. And then they fuck up or do something wrong or they catch feelings or they think it's like you're their girlfriend now or whatever. And then you go online and bitch about, oh, it's hard to find new male talent.
But see, see, that's because women do not pick men for content trade the same that we pick them. They normally pick because they want to fuck them. It's about it because, see, this is how these females think. And this has always been the age old thing. They think content trade is fucking for free. It's not fucking for free. You fucking to get content. You fucking because you ain't got money to pay that male talent, nor you got money to pay that damn camera guy. You need a male talent, you need a camera. Or if you got a camera, you need a male talent. So you're trading for both of y'all to use the content. The thing of it is that a lot of these chicks, one, they ain't going to pay a dude. Let's keep it real. Yeah. They ain't going to cover your travel. They ain't going to cover your hotel. Hell, they ain't going to give you a fucking ham sandwich if you come that motherfucker.
Yeah, no, exactly, yeah.
So they automatically assume that content trade is fucking for free. And then, of course, they want to throw in how much money is spent on their nails and upkeep. But even I had girls say, that's your upkeep. You do that anyway. You do that, go to the club. You do that, go to work. Yeah. So do you count that into that?
And you can probably write it off on your taxes.
Yeah, I didn't have somebody talk about that. Shouts out to Kaylee BBW. Kaylee BBW, shouts out to her. So, and because see, that's why I say is us as men, we have to move differently than them. Like I said, they get to come in with a deal, though. We got to come in find a chick. They have so many different ways to make money off the internet, you know, period. But they're also the biggest bullshitters and they're the biggest pocket watchers. Because half the reason why these girls get into business is because of somebody else they seen. Not anything they heard or research or what have you. They don't seek mentors. We seek mentors. Very few of them even go speak to somebody been in the damn business for a minute to even figure out how to even do this shit.
No, you're right. Because I've had girls ask me advice and I go, look, these are basic things that I think you should do. But at the end of the day, go reach out to a girl that's been in the industry for about a year or two because she's a woman. Mm-hmm. And as much as my intentions are good, and I always tell them, like, just like make sure a guy goes through these steps. If he's serious, he's going to be professional, he's going to behave in a certain way, and yada, yada, yada. But don't take my, and I tell them, don't take my word for it, even though what I'm telling you is true. Go talk to a woman and, you know, get that.
And you can see it online with articles of chicks saying this shit. Because, see, let me tell you what it is. Let me tell you the biggest mistake females make. And any female that's listening to this podcast right now, get close to your phone or whatever the hell you're listening to. They underestimate the business and overestimate their worth. There you go.
Yeah, well, I want to clarify my point before I comment on that was you have the right to work with whoever you want. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to make a choice solely on what I call high school rules, that mm-hmm. is fine. But that's your choice. So if the guy acts a fool, I'm not excusing any bad behavior, but don't go on the internet and then start going, male talent. Like, he's not male talent. Like, the guy hasn't earned the title to be called male talent. You made a choice. It didn't work out. Learn from it, because when you bitch about new male talent, you kind of convey a horror story from that. Other women hear it, and then they get very hesitant. I've been very lucky this year that, like, just like really established women like Nikki Stacks and Julie Ginger and Ash Lauren have been kind enough to like kind of work with me and put their name on me and be very giving on camera and just in behind the camera being very friendly with me because they are stars and they are professionals and I was very on my P's and Q's.
And see too, that's one thing I say about this generation of girls, they speak up for the male talent. For my generation, they didn't do that.
Oh, I mean
straight, no, seriously.
Yeah, no, I've been like I said, I can't, like, Julie Ginger was incredible when I was around her for a couple days and I got to work with her. It was one of the easiest scenes I ever did, and that's all because I put all the credit on her.
She heard my part because she told me I hit her up right when she did BBW Highway, right? And she told me, she said, I'm not doing amateur shoots no more. I said, I'm not an amateur, you know, but that it like that just show you the mindset of some of these chicks is that amateur is not your status, is what you shoot. And I think that's a big mistake people miss. You shooting with a cell phone, I don't give a fuck if you have lights, that's amateur. The reason why, because at the end of the day, one, the lens is small. You would never, ever, ever see Hollywood, even if they do it with, what is it? I saw a movie where they did a whole movie where a dude was looking through a door camera. But guaranteed you, it was a professional camera.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
hello? If you're there, man, and you can hear me, I can't hear you. Hey, buddy. Well, I heard you say son of a. If you need to hang up and send me another link, you know, it's okay. But I can't hear you right now. Hello?
Yeah, we back.
Okay.
No, but what I was saying was, so people can understand, so they don't think I'm trying to shit on Jill. No. No. By all means, she had the right to say no to me. And she said it respectfully. I might not like that what she said, but she said it respectfully compared to some of these other broads that want to act like a complete bitch to say no.
Yeah, you know,
but go ahead and say.
Yeah, no, I had a good experience with her, and that's the thing. I've had nominally good experiences, and like I said, I've had a few bad, and I choose not to go into great detail about some of the bad experiences, because it's like, all right, well then, you know, we won't work together, or next time I know to maybe handle a situation differently to, you know, not, I don't know, it just bugs me. If you're not, like, if you don't want to work with me, as an example, that's fine. You don't need to explain yourself. Mm-hmm. But then you're going to go work with this guy over here for whatever reason, and he's not talent, and then you're going to bitch about him like he is. That makes things unnecessarily harder. It's like, look, if you're so dead set on a certain thing, then you have to own the good with the bad. It's like, you can't, because now you're making, it's hard enough to be male talent. You could think what you want about me, and I've been getting some hate, which means I'm being successful in the last 2 months. But at the end of the day, I've earned the right to say I'm male talent in the industry. And that's
the important part, because people don't understand something. When I sit here and say that I've shot more than probably your favorite porn star, yeah, because I did what close to well over 400 fucking scenes within well over a decade. So when you have 10, 15, 20 scenes underneath your belt, especially you actually did straight up Hollywood shoots, then yeah, you have all the right to speak upon male talent shit, you know, period. But like I said, the biggest problem is that because the game has become so normalized, because the game has become so open, even to the point that I was saying the other day that a lot of escort traits has slipped into the game, such as deposits. There's never been a deposit. Like, I had a conversation with Kylie about that, which I understand why girls might ask that, but if you do your fucking due diligence to see he's full of shit, your ass wouldn't sit here and motherfucking get fucked over.
Yeah.
Because some of these guys, you can actually tell they full of shit. You can act but because they see, oh, he good looking. Oh, he got such a big dick. Oh, he let's shoot.
Yes. No. Yeah. And I will say this on the ladies' behalf. I'm sure, you know, some girls, they just kind of want to cover their bets. And there are some women that, depending on who the girl is, I would pay a deposit if I was paying for a scene.
Yeah.
But the thing I've noticed with some, and luckily I've never gotten, because I could just kind of feel the heat before I get too close. I've worked with some big names, and one of them being Julie and Ash, and some other ones, and they've all chill, very mellow, very personable off camera, to the point where I consider them friends. And I kind of, you know, sometimes I'm like, yeah. I wish Julie were in town. I would love to have dinner with her, or just have a drink and talk, you know. And you know, like, and these women have worked for, you know, like Brazzers and you know, BBW Highway and so on. These are stars with names and reputations, and they are very easy to deal with and very humble and very sweet ladies off camera. Mm-hmm. When you come out of the gate and you've been in the industry maybe a month and you're acting like, well, I need this, this, and this, and you're being kind of rude and standoffish and so on, it's like, all right, that's fine. You're probably not going to be around very long, so that's all right. I'm going to go over here now because I've worked with people that probably had no business giving me the opportunity that they did, but they did, and they were like, couldn't be cooler about it. So it's like, that's what you're competing with, people who are already stars and know how to treat people, and they're chill, and they're, you know, and so on. So it's like, if you, man or woman, if you want to walk in like you're hot shit, you better be, because once you hit a certain level, people are gonna be like, no, I'm not paying that, or I'm not gonna put up with that, or no, you're going to pay for your own flight here, or, you know, so on.
Yeah, because see, at the end of the day, at some point, you grow old. And for females, and see, here's the funniest thing. We catch the most hair, but we have the longer careers.
Yeah, yeah.
True. So I guess it balances out itself, don't you think?
I've actually said that a long time. It's harder to get in if you're a guy, but technically, if I stay in shape, I can go until I'm like 80. Yes. With girls, it really is a thing of like, how much do you want to be in the industry? Like, you know, a Sarah J, a Bella Danger, Anita Hartley. It takes a certain talent and charisma to, and you, like you said, you actually have to like it. You have to have a business savvy and like it. And there's a couple of girls I've worked with this year that I could see, you know, if they want to be like 10, 15 years down the road doing it, owning a studio, or, you know, having a couple of different houses and so on. It's just, you want to do it. And same thing with the guys. You know, it's like, I've had a lot of success this year, and I've also now had a weird, bad month. And I'm in, you know, rather than pouting, I'm doing a little bit of pouting, but rather than pouting, I'm a little bit of pouting. I'm also trying to like keep myself motivated with this Halloween project that I have, and I'm, you know, making plans for Miami, and I'm going to shoot with this woman tomorrow. Like, I'm trying to stay busy and be like, all right, you know, I can't stay in this rut. I got to move. You got to, at the end of the day, sex work is not easy money anymore, and you have to want to do it. And that's unisex. I don't give a shit what you do or what you're into fucking. It can be good money and it can be a fun thing, but you have to want to do it, and you have to want to be there.
Yeah, because see, the thing about it is, it's a lot to it. And like I said before, because people, they don't see the journey, they only see the end point. And because of that, they how can I put this? They miss the boat, because this will usually happen with females. The reason why I say they don't look at numbers. If I see that my shit is going down, because see, it's funny how they just love to put that like 0.6 and all that shit. But it's funny, they keep it up there, because I done heard girls say, and I know this as being content creator too, you have 1 month where your money is banging, next month is dead.
Yeah.
And females the same. So even if they are making that 6 figure, at some point by year 3, that 6 figure then dropped to 3 figures. And that's when now it's, this is where, and I'm going to tell you what's funny, tell me I'm lying. This is where the crossroads hit of whether or not they're going to keep their career going. Yeah. Because 9 times out of 10, the money went down because the fans want that boy girl. So now they got to make a decision to do boy girl or quit or still try my hand at doing these solos.
Yeah, I mean, I planned to make solo videos, and we talked about it in the last interview, like doing certain stuff, but it's going to be a mix, and I want to work with a lot of people. So I want to be doing different things. I'm learning shibari, like I said, I've been working on making set pieces, so I'm going to add costume making and whatnot to my resume. I want to do all kinds of different things. You have to be able to talk to your fans, find out what they want. You got to evolve, and you have to give them what they want. And again, it's not what you make, it's what you save. And you just got to roll with the times, Shane Diesel, who is a very smart man and a legendary talent. And now he's doing basically the cuck thing like that. Every time I see him on Twitter online, he apparently that's where the money's coming in right now. So that's what he's going to be doing, And if somebody said, we want you to be the Nutty Professor in every scene, if it was going to make him enough money, I guarantee you he'd be out there, just doing the thing, because he's a smart businessman as well as a talent. And he knows, he evolves with the times.
And that's where the last thing we're going to leave it on. The key to a smart businessman, successful male talent, female talent, any success is how you adjust to the change in the business that you're in. And in the business that we're in of porn, this thing changes rapidly. Actually, faster as the years go by, because I remember a time where, this is no lie, you can shoot twice a month and eat off them scenes for damn near 6 months. You better be shooting as much as you can, because we're in the microwave era.
Yeah, I mean, if I have a good Miami visit at Exotica, between that and the Halloween project that I'm doing, I should be able to coast to the end of the year, and there's still 2 more Exoticas to go. But yeah, I like to be busy. And again, I'm willing to do other things, but I prefer people pay me or they be in charge or whatever, and I make the stuff I like. Like I said, I've mentioned it a couple times, and when I make the official announcement, I'm happy to come on and make the official announcement, because I'm looking to make this like a big thing every year, like this Halloween thing. And, I'm starting the prep now because I would like to shoot the scenes in August and September. And I'm trying to corral girls to, and again, you try to, get ahead of the game, and, some of them, they say they're into it, and you get to come with, you're going to flake on me, I have a feeling, and whatever. So, you got to change with the time to be willing to do different things. And again, certain things, if my fans really wanted it, then I would make it happen. If a fan tells me they want, me doing something weird or whatever, then if it's going to pay, then yes. But most of the time, peeing on people is a big thing. It's not necessarily my thing. I'm not judging. But if I'm going to be peed on and or pee on somebody, I much prefer to show up to a set and get a paycheck. But if my fans say, hey, we really want to see some pee content, and it's like, well, this is going to help grow the brand and benefit me, then yes, I will do it. And I will find a way to get into it, and so on. You have to be willing to kind of always be testing those boundaries, and you got to kind of, be willing to kind of push yourself. I mean, you're already naked and you're fucking on camera, so you're done for the rest of your days. Like, it's on there forever. So it's like, you're already in. You're already in the pool. Might as well just go into the deeper end and see how long you can tread water. So
Okay, you know, because they always say you bring the butter from the duck. So, tell everybody where they can find you, Billy.
Well, I'm on Twitter at Billy Pilgrim, XXX. I have many vids. And a OnlyFans. I'm actually in the process of editing a bunch of stuff and trying to get it up there. I'm not the world's greatest editor, and I kind of do everything myself. But by the end of July, it'll be up and running and in fully functional. And it's all under Billy Pilgrim, XXX, OnlyFans, and many vids. And I'm going to try out this, look into this Just for Fans thing and everything else. And yeah, I'm just, unfortunately, the creative and the performance is my strong suit. Doing all this post-production and everything, I'm once the ball gets rolling, I'll catch on, but it's like, it's, you know, I try to edit and then I get into my own head and we're like, well, that's not a good enough cut or whatever. And then I know a guy, he said something to me one day and like, oh, I posted a video and I forget what he said, but he said something like, you probably didn't do this. And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Oh, fuck. Thanks a lot now. Now, every time I edit the video, I'm going to be thinking when I upload it, I'm not going to be doing this thing. I don't know what it is. so, you know, but the first thing I'm going to do when the money really starts to kind of come in steadily is hire people to do that shit for me. But yeah, yeah. I have an OnlyFans. It'll be up and running by like mid-July or like, you know, by the third week of July. By the time this probably hits the main, your main account, it'll already be up and running. I have a big Halloween. It's going to be a month-long thing in October, from October 1st to the 31st. And that's going to become a big yearly thing. And just, just going to be grinding and trying to get more studio work and everything else. And looking forward to coming back on here whenever you want me back.
Oh, most definitely. I definitely will have you back. You are definitely officially a smoke buddy.
We might have to do a wrestling podcast, just you and me, where we just do like...
Actually, that was the first thing I was going to do before I did this. I was going to do a wrestling podcast called Bull City Pro, where I review the wrestling and talk wrestling topics.
We might don't have enough to do. Let me give you one more thing to do. And, you know, we...
Shit, hey, I don't mind trying to make a network. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah, yeah.
Life is a learning experience. What's the point of experience you haven't learned anything? Smoke that over. Thank you for coming to the lounge.
No, it's my pleasure. And thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, it's been a great time.
No doubt. All right.
Thank you.